Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard, a change and transformation consultant and self-confessed fintech enthusiast. And today, we continue our series looking at the evolution of fintech in 2023.
You know, obviously you guys are doing some great work in your vertical. But what do you see right now as the top three challenges that fintechs are facing with inside sort of the embedded finance / insurance space?
Pretty much, you know, that kind of sort of describes us as a business. I think challenges we've faced, number one, working with the supply side and the existing / incumbent product manufacturers. Who do I mean by that? In the insurance space, that's insurers, reinsurers. Yeah. In the banking space, that's traditional banks, some of the more traditional credit providers and alternative lenders. Why has that been a problem for us? Speed to sort of the pace of change in traditional industry versus what we're trying to do in embedded finance.
Yeah.
It's completely different. So we have the ability to launch a new product in a week, if possible. Over here, particularly in life insurance, that's, you know, it's probably a 2-year process.
Yeah.
So there's a huge sort of misalignment between supply side and product manufacturer and tech platform / digital business who's looking to launch a new proposition.
Yeah.
So problem number one, speed to market. And I think if I'm a digital business and I have big growth targets for over a 5-year period, and part of my growth strategy is to embed a financial services product to A, add another revenue stream, and B, reduce churn, that's probably something I want to be able to do within the next 3 months.
Yeah.
For us as Satura, we want to be able to provide the product that digital business needs. We've got the capability to onboard and administer that product, as I said, you know, within a week, a month, and make it available.
Yeah.
If we could source that product in that amount of time from the supply side, perfect. Actually, to develop a relationship, to have the legal and regulatory structure in place in order to work with that product supplier, quote unquote, that's, as I said, a 2-year process. So that's sort of problem number one, working with traditional supply side baseline. And actually, as Satura, we're taking steps to move sort of backward in that value chain and not only be the technology platform, but also be the product manufacturer ourselves. So we have our own capacity, we have our own regulatory license.
Okay.
First in the life space, then in the commercial space. And I think we'll see that happening more and more as firms who are traditionally or previously just doing tech and now start to become the manufacturer because of their frustrations with the supply side. Problem number two is, for me, would be educating the distribution or educating distributors. So the power of embedded finance is enabling non-financial services companies, digital businesses, who really understand their users, given the data asset that they have. The power is enabling them to distribute financial services products, as opposed to banks or insurance companies who maybe don't know so much about that user profile or user type, but do have the product. So in order to So the problem I was saying is the education piece is digital businesses are perfectly poised to do this and to distribute these products, but they don't have the knowledge of, one, financial services, two, how they'd go about embedding financial services products. So for us as a business, instead of it being a 1, 2, 3 meeting sales process, you've probably got 4 or 5 meetings up front, just educating your distribution route, your distribution partner, as to the benefits of embedding financial services products. So I think there's an educational piece, given that it's a brand new concept, that is, you know, it's not necessarily a headache. It's definitely possible, but it takes time and it adds to the complexity of the integration.
Okay. Nice. I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that happening with a number of different, the same things actually come up with a number of different people over the last few weeks as well. Educating, not distributors, but educating the market, educating your consumers, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. So summarize those two: pace of suppliers, education on the distribution side.
Yeah.
Final one for me, and actually this I see becoming a big problem over the next sort of 5, 10 years, maybe 5 years, is if I I'm a digital business. Imagine I'm Shopify and I use Stripe as my payments platform. Mm. I use YouLend in the UK to power Shopify Capital, my embedded credit business.
Yeah.
And maybe I have another embedded insurance provider providing my embedded insurance. And perhaps I need more than one insurance product and I need more than one credit product within Capital. Mm. So maybe I need to go to one embedded insurance provider for one product and another for the next. I end up being a business with 5+ different integration touch points that my engineering team
has to
manage. So it's a problem that's not there yet, because people are just starting, right? People have either embedded one credit product or one insurance product. But really, the proposition for the end customer has to be a combination of credit insurance, and it probably has to have multiple types of products that aren't necessarily provided by every embedded finance provider. So I see there being a point where each provider of each of the embedded finance providers, you know, they've all got different versions of their API. Mm. They're continuing to update. Maybe they're steered by 1 or 2 big clients that have high concentration, and you're maybe not the biggest client.
Yeah.
You suddenly find yourself with the headache of having to maintain many API integrations that aren't just a technical requirement, but there's also a regulatory requirement to keep the product within the regulatory guidelines. So there's almost a spaghetti junction of integrations mess waiting to happen, unless there are platforms that offer both credit and insurance, or start to offer a broader product range, or the ability to work with a distribution partner through a single integration to provide all of the products that they might need. And that's sort of part of the thesis we have at Sature is, you know, if you're just embedded insurance or if you're just embedded credit, that your client is potentially going to end up with an integration headache, whereas we're trying to do both.
I like it. It makes complete sense. I mean, I've been in the cauldron of integration, system integration and what have you. Pretty much exactly what you just said actually transpired a number of years ago when I was integrating the trading platform at UniCredit. And oh my God, it is nasty. It is just, it ends up just being a bit of a mess, because, you know, the consumer obviously finally gets what they want, but between vendors and noise between integration and who's doing what and, you know, whose fault it is, it's sort of not worth it, right? So you guys obviously clearly have seen this, and I like it. Great solution.
Summarizing those three, supply side is slow, distribution partners need education to distribution partners and actually describing what is embedded finance, and then
integration.
Looking forward, integration nightmare.
Okay, cool.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
Now, something's also come up over the last few weeks, few months, I'd say, actually, sorry, a few years, and seems to be at the top of, if not all, obviously, is some fintech leaders. And it's compliance, right? So I want to know from your point of view, how can fintechs right now continue innovating, considering that, you know, there's more reg and more compliance, you have to, I guess, burden being put on them on a weekly, if not monthly, if not yearly basis. So, yeah.
I think there's going to be, I think as traditionally non-financial services companies start to distribute financial services products, you'll see more and more firms becoming agents, potentially, of other regulated entities. Again, to use Tura as an example, if we're regulated for an insurance intermediation, then perhaps in order for someone to design a truly bespoke financial services proposition, they would need to become an agent of ours in order to perform certain functions. Now, they can operate solely as an introducer, but I think this sort of agency model will become more and more popular as the financial services solutions that the non-financial services firms start to offer become more sophisticated. And therefore, I think the regulator needs to be able to scale with that process. And for us, really the burden is on the regulated entity to ensure that everyone is remaining compliant. And I think in the podcast video, I described some of how we're doing that, where we're able to control a large amount of the user interface that a partner is implementing or envisioning through the fact that we're vending, if you like, some of the regulatory or processes that have a compliance component involved. We're vending them via web components that are controlled and locked down by us, but still allow for some level of customizability. So I think as long as the person providing the financial services product, if they are regulated and understand the regulatory burden that will be on the distribution partner, then they have adequate controls in place to make sure that distribution partner doesn't sort of walk outside of those lines, you should be okay. That being said, you see a lot of fintechs that are started by tech people without necessarily having finance expertise. I think that's a real, I think that is something that is now starting to rear its head as a big problem for the regulator particularly.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And, you know, as part of this evolution, because it is, you know, I was talking to some other guys yesterday, they feel that, I mean, I guess it's the case of making certain that as leaders in the fintech space, we're also part of the conversation, right? You don't just want to take what you get given. You want to be able to shape what you get given, right? So maybe there's more lobbying, more involvement in those type of forums or those type of committees. So there is a voice of fintech in inverted commas pushing the agenda forward, but also pushing the agenda forward in a way that benefits all and benefits the ecosystem, and also makes certain that we can continue coming up with these upstarts or startups that are able to disrupt but also able to give access to finance that people maybe out there haven't traditionally been able to get access to.
Yeah, I think so. 2 points on that. One, I think the regulatory sandbox that the FCA runs is an excellent initiative to start to encourage startups. I think they have specific themes every quarter. Perhaps you can run multiple themes in parallel. We haven't seen embedded finance as a theme. But the existing theme around, I think it's environmental impact is quite a nice one at the moment. So yeah, regulatory sandbox is a great initiative. And on the open banking side, particularly as that sort of movement was starting, the OBIE entity had the implementation standards forum, and they had the FCA working group, and there's still a body that meets regularly to discuss regulation. But having that forum with sort of industry body, regulator, participant firms, that worked exceptionally well in the UK, and it's led to a model that is now being replicated across the world. So I think as new, bigger initiatives start, and throughout their lifetime, having that forum with almost an open ability to be a part of, or at least receive documents or the output of in almost real time is great.
I agree with you on that. And you know, as we look forward to the new year, to 2023, what do you think are the two or three big opportunities for fintech leaders out there?
As I said, I think sort of the topic of the conversation, but enabling an embedded model is number one, particularly if, say, you're an insurtech or a fintech firm who has a very strong, differentiated financial services product offering yourself, which you're providing maybe via a D2C proposition to the end customer.
Yeah.
If you can transition to making that product available via API, via a white level UI for others. I mean, sort of no brainer is that as more people become aware of embedded finance, that opens up that distribution channel. Market Finance did it very well recently, where market invoice became Market Finance. They offered invoice financing and other loan type products. And they've recently launched an embedded proposition where other distribution partners can start to embed the Market Finance product. So I think, that's number one strategically.
Yeah.
Let's look forward. Number two, we've been into a few sales meetings recently, or actually not even sales meetings, just conversations with bigger, larger digital businesses. And where you're pitching, we're pitching a slightly differentiated product. So you're sort of pitching embedded finance. A lot of these guys will start to say, well, I've been approached by X, Y, Z firm.
Yeah.
And they're all talking to me about, the same product. And everyone's going after the same eyeballs. Obviously, they're large scale distribution partners. So if you bag one of those guys, it's a great deal. But turning attention to the sort of second tier of non-financial services companies or digital businesses who actually have maybe provide a proposition that fills a very specific niche, I think starting to engage a smaller guy with a niche of product gives you an opportunity to really solve an issue rather than engaging the bigger platform with a more general product that doesn't really correct the financial services market failure.
Yeah.
I think that would be a nice pivot. And then thirdly is sort of challenge again is around. We see a lot of fintech businesses who have seen immense growth. So this sort of fintech 1.0, if you like, slapping a digital interface on what was the traditional financial services product. We're starting to see that growth come to a head, either because of the economic conditions or because they've started to saturate the market. It's now time to start thinking about how to sort of broaden the proposition, maybe start to reduce customer churn, start to improve revenue streams per customer, so that we might see this shift in strategy from growth at all costs to work with our existing large customer base to maybe provide them different products that we aren't at the moment. Say a neobank starts to provide insurance, or an alternative lender includes a protection offering alongside the credit product. So I think we'll see a shift towards that for certain.
Okay, brilliant.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.